Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we have the happy task tonight of discussing the Ravens offense in that absolute hog rendering of the Steelers in the game on Saturday, of course. Joining me to do that is Jordan Coe. Jordan, how you doing?
Good, Ken. Thanks for having me on. Happy day indeed.
Always a pleasure, as you know, and it even more of a pleasure when we have a football game like this to talk about. The Ravens absolutely demolish their arch rival, one of the most lopsided run games in NFL history, 299-29 in rushing yards, is the second most of the Super Bowl era, plus 270, versus the Bills had a plus 271 during the mid-90s. I want to say it was 95. And the only other game that's larger in the entirety of NFL history was the 73-0 1940 NFL championship game, which is the most points ever scored in an NFL game and was happened to be in the championship. And that was, I think, plus 326 in that game. So pretty outrageous.
Yeah, quite the imbalance in terms of what happened in the game. But obviously the Ravens, I was fully in support of it. I think that what the Bills' decision to run up the score against the Broncos was a mistake. I think they should have just kept running duo and letting James Cook run off tackle and go wild for the remainder of the game. They gave up passing situations. They gave up plays that are now going, the Ravens are going to be ready for. There are obviously a lot of plays to choose from, but things that you have practiced that you are going to put on tape, teams are going to be ready for afterwards. Mm-hmm. And the Ravens absolutely decided that they were not going to do that, and they were just going to run the ball. And I think that's going to benefit them down the road.
Yeah, they did shut down the playbook. They did some things, did a few advanced blocking techniques in terms of dealing with scraping players and chase and replace techniques. If you listen to Acho, right? I think it's the guy who did the video on that. But they did a few advanced techniques in that. But none of what they really stayed away from this game is any of the trap blocking that they had been doing the last couple of weeks. They stayed away from that. They didn't show anything on defense in terms of having a bunch of rushes other than four men. They used almost exclusively a four-man rush in this game. Well, we'll get to it a little later, but the Steelers rushed all sorts of different numbers. The Ravens never felt the need to do it, never felt the need to use a whole lot of deception in this game on defense. And if you look at the offense, I mean, the thing I was most impressed on about probably wasn't even the run game, although that was incredible. It was the way they replaced Zay Flowers kind of seamlessly with this combination of players. I didn't even consider Sims a wide receiver for purposes of this game. I'm looking at they're playing with five wide receivers. How can they do that kind of thing? Sims is a return guy, and you know he doesn't count. But Miller had three catches. Sims was in there for some pretty good number of snaps, like maybe around 15, and all kinds of gadgetry he was involved in. Aguilar, Wallace each had a big catch in this game. Really impressive how they distributed the ball.
I totally agree that it was impressive that that's what they did. I think it was 100% complete tape bait. And absolutely, like the Derrick Henry quarterback keeper run with Lamar in motion, same story. Like these are, like you're not going to see those plays again. You're going to see those formations again. You're going to see that motion again. And you're going to see them do completely different things. I just rewatched the Buffalo game in terms of what they did against Denver. They're really aggressive on like the motion from the wide receivers in the background, the swing passes. They are as aggressive as Pittsburgh around what they do in that regard. They're a little bit more surf than aggressive in terms of what they do with the zone read looks. But there's not a doubt in my mind that the Ravens are going to set them up for a hammer on that regard. And I think the hammer will ultimately be Derrick Henry on some kind of draw play or Lamar Jackson on some kind of draw play. They've got guys running from the middle of the field to the sides of the fields to chase those. And the Ravens were happy, more than happy, I think, to put those looks on tape and have them go to guys that probably are not going to have a meaningful role for the rest right. of the playoffs.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I don't see either Miller or Sims really having a significant role. Miller was used three times for three short passes in this game. Honestly, just an extension of the run game. He wasn't anything more than that. He didn't have a first down in the game. And then what Sims did, the 15-yard run, was a big deal. And then Aguilar and Wallace, who are the guys you would expect to step in into that number two role, they were both had important catches in the game, although I think only one each. I might have been missing a second catch from Wallace, but Wallace had the second and 20 play, one for 21, and Aguilar had the one big play on the end of half drive that took him down the field. Listening to Harbaugh today, I would describe him as a non-committal negative with regard to Flowers playing this week, but there's nothing I would pick up in the way that Harbaugh is giving clues and trying to drop clues, obviously, at the end of his thing as he goes on, saying he doesn't need to practice and he could still be on the roster kind of thing. Well, he's trying to tell the other team, you got to practice for Jay Flower. That's what he's trying to tell the Bills. But I don't see any way he's playing this week. Not from how it's been laid out in advance.
Yeah, I think we watched the practice schedule and it's dictated by how much he does or doesn't practice. If Zay Flowers doesn't practice at all, then you know, they even ruled him out of the Pittsburgh game early. There's no, mm-hmm. I don't think there's any, like you said, I don't think there's any advanced tactics here about what the Ravens are trying to do in regards to Zay Flowers. And if there were, they would have certainly not let that, they would not have ruled him out on Friday for the Saturday game in this instance.
Yeah. Deontay Hardy is another matter, but kind of an interesting description of Hardy's situation. He says, well, he's coming back from an injury. He's also had some personal injury issues. Well, I didn't know what those were, but apparently okay. And you have to make sure that the player is ready both physically and mentally. It kind of sounds like he's not expecting Hardy to play this game either. But if he does end up playing, and we'll see if he's a full participant this week, and he's, they have not really gone to players before the end of the 3-week window so far. Like Mitchell was the end of the 3-week window. I don't remember if Pierce was the second or the third week, but he might have been the one guy who was like 1 week early. Hardy, this would be the a week and a half back, so they don't even have to activate him yet. They can wait until after the AFC Championship. But I don't know if they if this might be a time where he gets activated.
Yeah, and Pierce was a week early and didn't play. So for, you know, whatever the context is there, he was able to play against the Eagles from an activation standpoint on the roster and did it. So I tend to agree with you that the Ravens are more conservative about these things. That being said, the Ravens punt return game does not inspire any, even the remote bit of confidence in me at all whatsoever. Like, fair catch it, let it fall and bounce. Like they can't afford turnovers in that regard. And, it doesn't seem as though the Bills were, well, the Bills had a couple nice plays against Mims actually in terms of punt action in the Denver game. So they got to have someone that's willing to get back there and catch the ball or let it go over your head and let it bounce, brother.
Right. And Harbaugh mentioned both in the thing today. Not that I can take a lot from that, but Harbaugh is saying things that he absolutely does not accept as a special teams coach. When he says, Sims would like to have one back when he tried to drift back and he caught the ball or tried to catch the ball at the 4-yard line or 5-yard line. Then he had to go back and cover the fumble, whatnot. Yeah, that's a play. If it's inside the 8-yard line, which is the John Madden rule, don't fair catch it. Just let it drop. Give the ball a chance to go into the end zone. And, you know, Harbaugh just doesn't have a lot of tolerance for that. And we've seen multiple return men get replaced, and now Harbaugh's having to kind of backtrack and say, we have complete confidence in Tylan if he's back there. We have complete confidence in Deontay Hardy if we put him out there. Now, I don't think he has confidence in anyone right now. I think that's a legitimate problem for this team.
I think the practice window was open for Hardy to be insurance just in case they felt like it got to the point where they had to do it. And again, even if it is just somebody that is going to get back there and fair catch the ball and you know can actually catch it, I totally agree. But that play with Sims was scary when, I mean, if you're backpedaling, you just got to run forward and you got to let it go over your head. You can't be trying to catch that thing off your shoulder. So it certainly does concern me as well.
He mentioned the other two that hit the ground and they happened to bounce in the Ravens' favor. So they got you know, they got good bounces on those. But I do think they want Deontay Hardy back. I don't know that there's a big difference. They probably are satisfied with what Sims can do for them from a gadget perspective after this game, I would think. You know, given the really nice run that occurred, timing seemed to be good on that play. We haven't seen him as a receiver yet. Hardy has done more as a receiver in his NFL career, but he's been so far removed from the offense for the past however many months. He's probably just as far behind as Miller and Sims are right now, and Walker for that matter, in terms of being involved. So it'd be an interesting thing how they deal with this. What else do we want to talk about? How about just briefly that there's a very solid physical performance from the offensive line. We'll get to this a little bit later in terms of how this went. A lot of the Ravens' run success, though, came from misdirection. So what I was very happy with was that the Ravens opened the playbook more or less, not maybe in terms of blocking scheme, but in terms of the misdirection components in the run game. And I thought that it was strange that the Steelers were doing a every play edge goes after the running back set of rules. Rather, even if you have something that varies that, like on second down, we're always going to go for the running back. On first down, we're always going to go for the quarterback kind of thing. Or just something that's less decodable than on every play, you're going to go after the running back. I think it would have been better. But this was a A-plus game for Lamar Jackson of making the reads properly to get the ball to Henry in the right situations.
Well, and it's an impossible situation. I have no positive feelings for the Steelers, but my heart goes out to them because there is no way to defend this, right? Like there's nothing that you can do. You can have guys that play where everybody divides up and you just stay with whoever you think your guy is. And the Ravens are going to absolutely run all over that. Lamar's going to make the right decision about that. You can crash, you can chase Lamar, you can chase Henry. The tendencies of all that stuff are really clear when they happen in the moment. And the Ravens do a really good job of scheming up some of those guys to be the free rusher. So it's easy for Lamar to tell what he has to do in that situation, right? Mm-hmm. So when this guy is crashing, the Ravens are intentionally not blocking that guy because they know Lamar will make the right decision in that circumstance.
Right.
And that makes it an impossible decision for any defense, whether they're doing the same thing every time or they're changing it up every time. Like maybe you get a little bit of success because your blocking scheme is better. But if you let Lamar get out on some of these plays. I mean, there was a lot of criticism on the one play where three guys seemed to flow with Lamar, which let Henry cut it back for the touchdown. I'm not convinced that if Lamar would have kept the ball there, that any of those three guys would have actually gotten to him. So even though those three guys are looking at Lamar still, that doesn't mean God bless Bills fans. You know, you guys are fun. You have a great time up there. But anybody who thinks that Matt Milano is going to be able to stop Lamar Jackson like he stopped Bo Nix has another thing coming to them. Like there were a couple times where he's the spy on Nix and he got to Nix and they are fundamentally different players. Lamar's right. Getting to the edge on those plays. And he's getting out of some of the pressures that Von Miller got against Nix as well. And so that's the hand you're dealt when you have to play a guy like Lamar Jackson. And, you know, I feel for these defenses because it really does change the dynamic in terms of what run fits and all of those things have to be and how they have to look. It just goes out the window.
You have to make a lot of sacrifices, particularly at safety, to get people to the right spots on the edge to make that. And then that really severely weakens your pass defense, of course. The Ravens will need to figure out how to do that. I guess here's my question. I'll pose it as a question to you, but obviously you're gonna get the sense of my strong feeling about this. So the Ravens play the Steelers at least twice per season, and not on often in the playoffs. The Steelers have $100 million defense that, by the way, their fan base can't stop complaining about how much money they're spending on defense relative to offense, and they are built and in large part to stop Lamar Jackson and the read option. They assembled the players. Deshaun Elliott was a pickup directly acquired on that, you know, to do that. And Patrick Queen, even though it didn't work out for him very well in this game, is a man, you know, chosen for that. The other teams in the division have similar players. Wilson, JOK, are guys specifically to deal with Lamar Jackson. The Buffalo Bills, Matt Milano is one of the best coverage inside weak side linebackers in the game. And he's coming back from an injury, and he's played his best game this last weekend against Denver. That's for sure. But I'm pointing this as a question. How do you rate the Bills' chance to stop the read option or an offense that's run in a similar manner to what the Ravens did against the Steelers, given their situation and relative familiarity with the Ravens?
Yeah, I mean, the familiarity is absolutely working against them. Look at what happened when the Ravens and the Bills played in Week 4. Mm-hmm. Now, that gives them a slight bump in terms of familiarity because they have played a bit more recently. There's a bit more on tape in terms of what they're getting. There are other parts that are kind of like fit into how all that ends up working together, right? So maybe they get a plus up in terms of what the familiarity is. Go find if you're listening to this, go find the gif of Matt Milano trying to tackle Lamar Jackson in the backfield of one of the prior Buffalo Bills games where he falls on his butt. That is what I have to say about Matt Milano spying Lamar Jackson. I think that if they are going to have to play a lot more zone than they played against Denver. They're going to have to be two guys that are kind of jointly spying Lamar and almost playing it like a contain. And guys like Von Miller are not going to be able to crash the pocket against Lamar in the same way that they were doing in terms of what they were doing against Bo Nix. And so you mix all of those factors together, and it's a really good question about what they're going to do. Now, I mentioned this earlier, the Steelers like the crash methodology, right? They have a guy, he's assigned to a guy, and that guy pursues whoever that is. So he pursues the running back. Or in the first iteration when they played, a lot of those guys were chasing down Lamar, and it felt like they were keeping the ball out of Lamar's hands as a result of that. One of the advantages of that style of play is that it takes play action out of one of the opportunities for the Ravens. The Ravens were really not successful running play action in terms of this game in particular, because the Steelers are always trying to push somebody into the backfield. They're always trying to kind of get into the mesh point. They're always trying to make that part of it messy. At the same time, if they miss, then the Ravens are going to do exactly what Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson did, which is run for 300 yards against these guys, right? So Buffalo takes a much more passive, and even against Bo Nix, they took a more passive approach. The challenge in that now is going to be then, how are they going to deal with the Ravens play action game? Because if the Ravens can go to play action in those circumstances and the Bills decide to bring more guys down into the box to stop this, which is the only way to stop it, especially if you're more passive in terms of what you're trying to do on defense, then the Ravens are going to have a lot of opportunities, I think, when it comes to the play action game. And they're going to take advantage of it. And it's going to be on the same crossers that we saw from Likely, from Aguilar, we've seen from Mark Andrews. Those crossers are just once they have a sense of whether or not the Bills want to play man or zone, the Ravens will know exactly what they need to do running or passing to attack that. And it's going to be a chess match as to whether the Bills can actually, whether they actually have the personnel to match up with that.
Well, it'll be great if that goes into the hands of Jackson on a pre-snap basis, because that's where I really trust the Ravens to get it right. Your defensive coordinator can only take you so far in terms of getting you aligned, getting you on the field. Eventually that quarterback gets to make a read against you. And when he figures it out, pre-snap or post-snap, it can certainly be trouble. I was incredibly impressed with how the Ravens pulled out all the stops on running Lamar Jackson in the playoff game. And that's the way it's got to be for the next three, the next month, basically these next three ball games, if they play them all, there needs to be no limitations on how much Lamar Jackson runs the football. No case where you say, okay, we're not going to run Lamar 22 times. If you need to run Lamar 22 times because they're just completely sitting on Henry at the mesh point, then you need to run him 22 times. I mean, it's just going to have to be that way. The Ravens did a great job with that. They did a great job with misdirection. And they really, there are a number of plays where they ran the Steelers out of position. Did you mention the direct snap already to Henry and how?
I mentioned it lately. Yeah. And I think they're going to riff.
Yeah. I mean, that's another one that it'd be nice to see that again. But they ran people out of position there. Lamar Jackson was definitely his magnetic self in terms of taking bodies with him. Did a good job of selling the fake, I thought, also after the mesh point in this one.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I think that we'll see more. The Ravens like to do this against the Bills where they use Lamar as a runner and they swing him out of the pocket, and it looks like it's going to be a design quarterback keeper, and then they throw. And this has been a progression going all the way back to Lamar's first year as a starter, when in the Bills game that they lost in Buffalo, he overthrew Mark Andrews on a similar play. And slowly but surely, the Ravens have been making that look more and more like a real run and less kind of like a muddled stretch and hope the one guy that's kind of running past them gets open kind of thing. I think we're going to see a couple of those. You know, it's similar to when we saw it in the was in Miami when Lamar used his shoulders and made it look like he was going to move one way to create a lane as a runner and then immediately stopped and turned and threw the ball, that he knew the safety was going to follow with him when he made that move. He went to the left and then he turned back towards the right and he threw a deep.
He was pretending to throw a ball left-handed at one point. Is that something?
Well, I think what he was really trying to do is pull everybody running to the left, which is what happened, right? And everybody follows him to the left as a runner, and then he stops and turns, and it's an easy throw for him, right? It's difficult to get pressure on him in those situations. It's difficult to keep him, or it's difficult to kind of get anybody in his face in those circumstances. I think we're going to see it all. I mean, it's at the end of the day, Lamar has been kind of given the full keys to the offense here in terms of what we saw in the Steelers game, which is that we'll start with read option. We'll see what you can do about that, and then we'll progress through whatever we're going to do. Right. Like you said, if you can't stop read option, I don't think the Ravens are going to go away from it in this game.
Right.
And especially if you're going to run a play action approach like the Steelers did.
Yeah, they don't really need to. And, you know, I really had questions about whether Henry was going to be a high-quality read option running back. He's been terrific. This has not been a source of fumbles this year. He has, as we saw in this game, a really appropriately loose cage that he was allowing Lamar to either on one of the long runs, might have been the 44-yard touchdown run, Lamar actually kind of shoves it into the cage. Henry doesn't seem to be sure if Lamar wants to take it out or not, but he kind of shoves it into the cage. So it's really been nice to see that. I'm not saying Henry's been perfect himself in terms of fumbling the football, because he let the ball go after the goal line once. He let the ball go another time where he's kind of holding it out to his, loose on the side of his body. But he's been very good at the mesh point in terms of making it be him or Jackson can have the football and he can pull it late as well. Let's talk a little bit about Patrick Queen. Now, Patrick Queen, a polarizing figure always in this, and I don't want to be the guy who beats on Patrick Queen all the time. There is a certain amount of schadenfreude with him leaving the Ravens, being a little mouthy about it, doing that. But you know, that's not the center of what it did, how I think about Patrick Queen. Patrick Queen is not a good football player right now, and he wasn't a good football player in this game, possibly because he was sick was a big part of it, but he really hasn't been a good football player this year. What I really noticed this year, if you just look at Patrick Queen and look at the All-22 play after play, I know he hugged Lamar Jackson after the game. We had a little bit of talk about that. You know, could there be some flu or whatnot that would be an issue? I'm most worried about our guards at this point, because they were getting up to level two to block Patrick Queen all the time. He had no shedding ability at all.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to evaluate Patrick Queen in this game because of his health. And I thought that Patrick Queen had a very good game. The first game when the Steelers beat the Ravens, it's hard to argue with that. The forced fumble, he was everywhere all over the field. So I think he even said it going into this week, and maybe he was leading up to this because he was already sick, but he was kind of like, whatever vitriol, or I forget the word he used, but he was like, kind of whatever I had in me to be upset on the playing field about this is now out of my system. We've already played twice. It's just, you know, this is another football game. This is a playoff game. We got to go win, right? And I think that was part of it too. The motivation, certainly, the certain motivation wasn't there already ramped up to begin with. There wasn't a good defensive performance to stack on top of that. So there was no emotional push on the other side of that. And then allegedly took 4 IVs the day of the game. If that's true, I mean, you're talking about a guy.
Shouldn't have played.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that the Steelers have a better option in terms of
Peyton Wilson and Alandon Roberts are a better pairing on the inside if you're just going to do that. I mean, you're really having Patrick Queen on the field. Like, Patrick Queen is their signal caller, I believe. Next year, by the way, I looked at this game. If I, not knowing about the sickness, which I did not going into this, I didn't hear the Steelers guys, and I listened to several post-game reviews of this, hit on the Patrick Queen thing. But I look at the All-22 of him. I look at the regular broadcast video of him, which is a lot of the emotion at a closer distance. I see a player who's completely disengaged from football during that game. All I'd say is, anyone out there, take a look. See if you see something different. On the 13-run play drive, Patrick Queen tried on about two of those plays. Literally, he's really making no effort at all. He's highly averse to contact, which was an issue with him in Baltimore. He's obviously not wanting to get hurt in the last game of the year, which, you know, we always think about. But I think he's actually, if I had to, you know, analyze the situation without really drawing on the health problem, I'd say Patrick Queen was in fear of being cut at the end of this year. He has that contract where the Ravens, sorry, not the Ravens, the Steelers save about $10 million by cutting him. And very team friendly the way that deal is structured. And Patrick Queen could well be out on the UFA market this season, particularly if the Steelers go through a significant rebuild. I don't think he'd be part of it.
Yeah, it's a good question about how they evaluate him. Again, I would take this game out of the equation from that perspective. They know how sick he was. At the end of the day, that's Mike Tomlin and Terrell Austin's decision about whether or not Patrick Queen played. And if he was, if he took four IVs, I would have sat him down and I would have made him inactive, right? Like, if you want a guy that you think isn't ready to play, not playing, then you take away his ability to play, no matter how bad he begs to play. And so for whatever those reasons are, it makes it difficult to take this one game and judge it. They also were just absolutely bullied from start to finish in this game. There was not a lot of heart from anybody on that Steelers defense. Minkah Fitzpatrick looked like a ragdoll about 10 different times in this game. And he's supposed to be the heart of that defense. I mean, it's just, they're not cutting him. Right. So, you know, I think that by the time it was 20, when they called that timeout at the end of the second quarter, at the end of the first half, and gave the Ravens a chance to go down and score again, I still don't understand that decision on Tomlin's part. He should have just let the game ride at that point. That was the end of it. I think at that point, moving forward, it was done.
Well, let's move on to that, because, of course, the Ravens won the snap count 72-45. And Tomlin talked about, he was at the podium and he talked about fatigue being an issue and the loss of snap count being a problem. Tomlin is not an innocent bystander to that snap count victory. In fact, in particular, if you don't go for it on fourth down gives you two things you can do. Number one is you can make it and get 3-6 additional plays or even more on that drive for your own team. Not to mention the points that they needed very badly. And already, you know, if you look at Ben Baldwin bot or any kind of victory thing, down 7-0, the Steelers are in very dire straits against the Ravens. I mean, their chance to win might be 6% if they make it on that first 4th and 2, now I'm talking about from the 38-yard line. 6% if they miss it, and 11% if they make it. They're not in a good spot in the ball game, and they should have known it, and they had about a 10% advantage on that wager. So you and I are both gamblers, Jordan. Okay? If we could get to some sort of craps bet where we thought there was a 10% advantage in terms of our money wagered, how quickly would we get to that table, wherever it was in the world, relative to us at this current moment? Or blackjack, same thing. I mean, 10% advantages don't come along very often. And yet, in the name of conservatism, which is really just in the name of loss, that's all it is, Tomlin made a very poor decision the first time and an unforgivable decision the second time on the 4th and inches.
Yeah, you know, and what I don't get about those decisions was Pittsburgh should have tried to be shortening the field anyway.
Yep.
Part of their problem was the long drives from the Ravens. Yep. It was a time suck, like you were saying. It was a snap count suck. It was it was all the things that were like not adding up for what they wanted. Like, do something to force the Ravens to throw the ball more instead of run the ball more. I mean, there were just a lot of tactical decisions that were really questionable. I think it was, you know, you hate to kind of say that it was like waving the white flag a bit too early, but it did feel like they were waving the white flag early in terms of what they were trying to do. They should have done what they did in the second half and the first half, and it might have actually been a game if they would have done that, and they would have been a more aggressive and played like it was the last game of the season. So I don't understand all of that. You know, I guess maybe if it's 14-0 at the end of the first half, that's not terrible if you're Pittsburgh. You know, in the broader scheme of things, that's a battle that you can fight. But at some point, you've got to have something on the board and you got to go for it. I don't understand it.
I first of all, the 14-0 deals with some decision that was made that I don't necessarily think that the Ravens would have been. Let's see, what was this? It was a fourth and nine from their own 43. That's not the one I would have a problem with. Right. I mean, they could have gone for that. There's probably probably some models which would tell him to do it. But it's the fourth and one and the fourth and inches the fourth and two. Yeah. And that's the one you just you can't say no to. I mean, it's just it's too much value left on the field and you're giving up. And I'm surprised the players are not all over Tomlin for that. I'm surprised the ownership is not all over him. And the other thing you mentioned is really significant. You have some dead cat bounce value you get from actually turning over the football out there because you're giving the Ravens a shorter field and fewer plays to score in reverse. That's actually very important. You know, giving up a six-play touchdown drive is a lot better than giving up a 13-play touchdown drive. Now, you won't assume that you give it up in either case, but it is some of the dead cat bounce value of that or redraw value, if you want to call it that. It's not generally considered by NFL coaches. And they lost this game in large part on snap count, in large part on defensive fatigue. And yeah, they were bullied all over the place, but the bullying got worse because the snap count got heavier. If he's mentioning fatigue, he should have been a projected fatigue better than he did.
Well, and if Sean Payton is willing to go for a fake punt on a fourth and nine, mm-hmm. and the Steelers activated Justin Fields for like this very specific instance, it's questionable. It's certainly questionable. I don't think that the Steelers can do, I think they will struggle to do better than Mike Tomlin. I think if you look at it in a complete vacuum, but it feels like that game had a lot of decisions that could lose a locker room. And I think that's something that has to be considered about his future with Pittsburgh.
Right. Well, Rich Eisen was looking at it and he's basically saying that Tomlin is at his Andy Reid moment now, where he's at kind of the end of the rope in terms of the ability to move forward in the playoffs with a team and it's generally successful, and that he really needs to move to a situation where the quarterback is in place already. And then he doesn't have that, you know, being his baggage anymore. And he can move there. And of course, Reid did that to go and get into the Mahomes situation when he did. And it's worked out very well for him. Could easily see that being a thing that Tomlin does. And it could be, you know, he spends a year or two out of football before he does it. So the Steelers may, you know, that may be the agreement, is that he can't coach in the next year, or, you know, the other possibility is still on the line there, that the Steelers may say, we want to part ways with Tomlin, but this is the way you trade him. I mean, this is the way. So Tomlin really wants to leave. Somebody else really wants Tomlin. You say, well, we own the rights to Tomlin, and you offer him up in trade, even though you're not that unhappy to have him go. I don't think it's as far fetched as people, Pittsburgh fans, seem to believe.
I think it's unlikely to happen, but I don't think it's impossible. Mm-hmm. I would clock it closer to 20% likely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's reasonable. That's reasonable. Not good scheduling for the Ravens, going ahead. The Chiefs get the Saturday game, the Sunday AFC night game, which is the nightmare game. It's the one you don't want. It's kind of like the Monday night game this week is the one you really, really don't want. But the Ravens are going to have longer rest going into that game in Buffalo, which I guess is good, but it's the difference between 7 and 8 days, you know, in terms of rest, which is a lot less than the difference of 6 versus 7. So the Ravens won't gain as much benefit from it. And then they'd have to face the Chiefs on short rest, assuming the Chiefs win and are the AFC in the AFC Championship game. But even if the Chiefs don't win and the Ravens host the AFC Championship game at home against the Texans, the Ravens will be the ones on short rest. So it doesn't work out any way you want. It is now a benefit that seems to be given on a consistent basis to the number one seed. So not only do you get a bye, but you also get a better order of Saturday, Sunday in the divisional and championship round, which, as long as it's applied consistently, I guess I don't have a problem with, but I've never felt like it's been done consistently in the past. But anyway, as long as it's done consistently, I guess I'm okay with it.
Yeah, it's certainly quirky, but it's also a bit to protect the two seeds that would theoretically advance as well, right? Who are, if they are playing in this case, which they both did on Sunday, right? So playing on Sunday, they have to play on Sunday again, or they're going into the next round on a day short rest already, right? And so in the scheme of things, I would rather everybody in this upcoming round be equally rested or more, right? And that's the same thing that we get in the next round, as opposed to like disadvantaged in some way. But it certainly is not ideal.
Yeah. All righty. Yeah, bummer. I mean, I mentioned to you earlier, but Maureen and I had planned to go to the national championship game, and now it's not working out. And this is really sucks, because we had anticipated a Saturday game. If I had researched it a little closer, we wouldn't have put ourselves in this position. But now I feel very bad about disappointing her in this way. And we're going to Buffalo, but we're not getting to the down to Atlanta for the game. There's some good news here. Jackson said that the Lamar injury, meaning the kneeing he took in the back, not anything regarding illness, he doesn't believe is going to impact him this week in terms of practice.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one scary thing. You know, it doesn't get talked about a lot, if at all. It barely got talked about last year. But after the Chiefs game, like months after, Lamar, when he won Best Play of the Year, he came out and he said he would have taken it to the house if he wasn't hurt. And it was the first time through all the playoffs that we heard that Lamar was even remotely banged up. There was no murmur. I mean, obviously the Ravens keep a super tight lid on all things injury related anyway. But he kind of let it slip a little bit that he was like, oh yeah, if I wasn't banged up like I was, that would have been a house call. And even when that play happened, that was my reaction. I think Lamar lost some weight because he was pissed that he didn't take that to the house, because he could have. And the way he's running this year, he could. So at the end of the day, it's all about that. It's all about keeping Lamar healthy. But, you know, it's all about Lamar anyway. You got to let him run. You got to take advantage of everything that he gives you. We saw it in that stretch where the Ravens were bad and kind of like that late middle third of the season, where it really felt like Lamar was not running the ball and teams were not honoring him to run the ball for whatever that reason was. I still think it was health. I still think Lamar was sailing the ball a little bit when he was throwing the ball during that period of time as well. His accuracy didn't go kind of completely down the toilet, but it was not quite where it's been recently. His accuracy in the Steelers game was phenomenal. Even though it was limited, it was excellent. And so it's all about Lamar's health all the time. And it's the same thing for Patrick Mahomes. It's the same thing for Josh Allen. All these at this stage of the game, your quarterback's health matters almost infinitely to your ability to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, if Allen were hurt at any point, Mitch Trubisky is not going to lead the Bills to the Super Bowl, no matter how that happens. So the gauntlet of teams the Ravens are going to have to face the rest of the way, they're not going to face a weak quarterback. They're not going to face a team that really has any individual weak component of their game the rest of the way. And they literally could face, Allen, who they will face, Mahomes, and then – you know, I don't even know what the best NFC matchup is, because they're all hard. But the Philadelphia, the specter of facing Philadelphia is probably the most scary, because I think defensively they match up extremely well against the Ravens, and they are potentially a team that would give them a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Let's move on to some other things. I did want to talk about Todd Monken having two scheduled interviews, I believe. Now he's still at two, right? Not three. And it's the Bears and the Jags are the two.
Yeah, Bears and Jags.
Okay. I guess some other things. I was very impressed by the way the Ravens, the Steelers knowing that the run was coming for the last 6:06 of the game, and they were forced to, they turned the ball over on 4th and 15. Another benefit of, not going for it early on 4th and inches, 4th and 2, is you get to go for it on 4th and 15 late in the game when you really want to. The sarcasm dripping from my voice, it doesn't always translate really well over the airwaves. But they held the ball for the last 6:06, and it was 10 plays. It ended up being a couple of passes, I think, on that. Now, did they throw any passes? They might not have thrown any passes.
I think they threw a couple of passes.
Yeah, I get always a little bit confused.
I think they threw one pass.
Zero.
No? Okay, just kidding.
Yeah. They had a defensive holding. Called on that last drive. So there might have been something going on downfield, but I think it might have been a run anyway, or a scramble or something. But whatever, they took the defensive. No, it might have been a completion. And they completion to Andrews, maybe, that was short of the sticks, and then they end up
getting, and then they get the 5 yards holding.
So yeah. So officially there were no passes on that play. And there are no passes on the 13-yard touchdown drive, which we want to talk about a little bit later. But that's 6:06. was as impressive a curb stomping of an opponent that knew the runs coming as you'll ever see. And it wasn't a whole lot of big plays. I mean, the runs specifically were run for two, run for seven, run for five, run for three, defensive holding, run for eight, run for three, run for five, run for four, run for two. I mean, it's Woody Hayes kind of 3 yards in a cloud of dust kind of stuff, but it's incredibly effective.
I will admit to having a large parlay on the Ravens covering the full 10 and okay. the over okay, and not one. Being thrilled that they didn't get a bit more on that last drive or the drive before it.
Would a breakaway have done it for you? Would that have gotten you the
yeah, over? A field goal would have done it.
Okay.
A field goal.
You wanted him stop. You wanted him get less.
I wanted them not to convert the last third down or for Tucker to come out and kick that field goal.
Okay. All right, man. The man of divided loyalty.
I mean, either way, they would have been up by 17. The game would have been done. In the prior situation in the Steelers game before, they did the exact same thing where they were up 34-14 and they kicked the field goal just for the insurance of it. And so I think they would
tell yourself whatever you need to, Trader.
Still more than happy with the outcome. I still made a decent chunk on the game. I just would have 3x'd it if that one would have covered. But at the end of the day, you know, the bully ball is where it is. And I think we're going to continue to see that in Buffalo. It's interesting that the over, like just speaking about gambling in general while we're on this, I would be deathly afraid of the over in this game, even though Jackson and Allen can both go off. I think both teams probably have 2 7-plus-minute drives in them. Whether or not they score touchdowns on those or not, even if they did on all four of those, that's still like barely half of the over. Right. And that's half of the game. And so just as those kind of things shake out, two solid defenses overall, two teams that are going to be kind of gritty. I think you're going to see a super conservative first half. Like the under in the first half of this game, I think is where it's going to be. And the Ravens are going to try and do the exact same thing they did to the Steelers against Buffalo. And if it works, I don't think that they're going to stop.
Okay. Well, the line has flipped as I look at it. Just before we went on air now it's Ravens -1. It was started off with Buffalo
-1.5 in some places. It's already 1.5 in some spots.
Wow. Okay.
I got the +1.5 early. You gotta be quick on these. The same thing happened in the Steelers game where it opened at 7.5 and it went at one point all the way to 10.5.
Yeah. 10. You saw 10.5. Okay. So I saw 10 with an overlay on the Ravens, but I never saw 10.5.
It wasn't a full 10.5. It was like a -118 at 10.5 in some spots, but it did get to 10.5, which is pretty wild, right? Like to move a line that big already, like with these lines, right? And like it's just kind of like anything with diminishing returns, anything between kind of like twos is super fungible, like for Vegas. I don't think that it means nearly as much to them. But once you get past that 7.5 marker to move any parts of that line, there has to be a ton of money coming in on one side for that. I would be really interested what Vegas' exposure was on the Ravens in this past game.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be. I mean, sometimes the horse track loses money because they're forced to pay out 210 on a show bet. So it can happen. But anyway, I'd be interested to hear that too. Let's move on though. It was an unusual game because wind, I don't think was a really big factor. Weather, it was very cold there, and you know, they were trying to keep people heated, particularly Lamar, for as long as possible. But the wind honestly was less of a factor. Walking up to the game, didn't really feel it. And I'm bundled up, but it's still, I would think that I would feel it on my face or something at least to do it. And I really didn't. And we did see when the colors were out there, flags were kind of really going pretty heavily. Maureen noticed and pointed it out. But the top of the goalpost flags were not really heavily blustering or you know, showing the effect of wind. For very much of the game at all. They were moving a little bit, but they weren't like really horizontal in any way.
Yeah, it didn't seem to impact any of the throwing from either of the players. And I think certainly Wilson probably would struggle more with wind than anyone with the way he likes to throw those moon balls. Lamar's got a much tighter arc in terms of what his throws look like. So I think he'll be less affected. I think they're saying like gusts, like steady wind 7-10 right now, with gusts to 15 in Buffalo next week. So it'll be interesting to see whether that has an impact. But they also have their stadium is kind of like the Rams stadium, even though it's open on the top, where it's down a level. You go in and you go down. Mm-hmm. So even in those circumstances, I think the wind ends up playing a little bit less of a factor because of that.
That might be true. I don't honestly have a real sense of that. It kind of depends on where that opening to the outside is and how much they allow to kind of cross through there. Despite those wind conditions, I would have thought that yak would have been a bigger part of total passing yardage. But again, it was 49% in this game, which is right in line with the season average of 50%. Bateman had a lot of air yards. He had a 24 yards, which is not a lot on the two receptions, but 21 of those were air yards. And even I looked at Aguilar's throw. I thought that Aguilar had a lot of yards after the catch, but it was like 16 on the catch point and 9 after the catch on his 125-yard catch. So unusually, it still was a pretty high percentage of total yards in the air for Lamar, even though it wasn't a lot of total yards in total.
Yeah, well, they just also weren't trying to throw the ball all that much. And the Steelers were coming so aggressively in terms of what they were trying to do that it wasn't, I don't think, necessarily going to be successful in the way the Ravens had set their scheme up. They would have had to make significant adjustments in terms of what they wanted to do to try and spread them out and force them to do that. It'll be interesting to see if that's the approach with Buffalo or not. But sans Zay Flowers, I think it's unlikely.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how they do that. But it doesn't seem like in Buffalo that Tez Walker would all of a sudden have a big role because, you know, he's more of a deep threat than anything else. And I wouldn't see him. I see Wallace and Aguilar as being much more valuable in terms of being extended play guys who know how to work with Lamar and get open. All right. Let's see what else happened in this game. 14 missed tackles, 13 were rushing missed tackles, one by receivers. So a lot of that was Henry with 7, Lamar had 3, Hill had 3 for the rushers. I think likely had the only receiving missed tackle. So while that seems high, it was really only a 14.6% missed tackle rate. Browns, by the way, last week missed 31% of their tackles against the Ravens. 31%. I mean, it's a Bahamas game. It's a pack your bags game. That's still an awful percentage for one football game. But the Ravens actually had a higher missed tackle rate themselves than the Steelers, even though they only missed 7 tackles. And the reason was Steelers were throwing the ball the whole game. They only ran the ball 10 times. The Ravens ran it 50, including the kneel. And the Ravens ended up having to be tackled a lot more. And even though the Steelers missed some of those, it was still a lower rate overall.
And there were a lot of runs into the gut of the defense that were, I mean, you would have to take away the tush pushes, right? Like those three plays, there's no availability for broken tackles on those plays.
That's right.
So things like that, I think would be, you can't look at that from a straight percentage perspective.
I mean, you probably still have a very good idea from the straight percentage perspective, but I agree. It would be better to take those plays out. Cause what you're talking about is taking an 0 for 3 out of the total. That's literally is like 16 for 96 or 14 for 96 for them. So we're not talking to, you know, it's not a big change. Ravens went 3 for 4 in the red zone. Their only failure was that final kneel out drive that frustrated you from a gambling perspective, but honestly, it was a good one. They had 29 first downs in the game, which ties the Ravens playoff record. In that 2019 divisional game at Tennessee, where they ran the most snaps they ever did. They ran over 90 snaps in that ball game and had 29 first downs, but it's still not a day we want to remember.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, the numbers that the Ravens put on the ground in every iteration were staggering. It was just as staggering to watch. It's one of those ones where the tape, it wasn't like one massively, it wasn't like 10 runs and one really long run and they were getting stuffed all the rest of the time or anything like that. This was a clinic that got put on by Todd Monken and the offensive line.
Yeah, they did a really good job. And we probably need to give credit to Warhop for the development, in particular, I think, of Falele this year in terms of how much his game has improved. Last 4 games, by the way, Daniel Falele has been terrific. He's been absolutely terrific. We'll get into that a little later, but I'm happy with the way that's worked. And I think that they got a guy. I don't see him as a guy that they won't try and replace next year. I think Warhop was already kind of ready to retire. Maybe he'll decide that he wants to stick around with a team that's got a running game like this. But I think the Ravens they should at least have their succession plan in place for a guy his age to be retired in 1 year and them to have a really high powered younger offensive line coach relates to players well, et cetera, that they can bring in. All right. So here's the big question. Coming out of all this scheme stuff, what changes do you think the Ravens should consider on offense as a response to the possibility of the playoff weather they project in Buffalo? Play heavier, maybe more misdirection, personnel changes at wide receiver that they might have gotten away with against the Steelers?
I think everything is directly dictated to you by what Buffalo wants to do on defense. If they are passive at the mesh point, if they are going to let you take 3 or 4 yards but try and stop you and you can't get it going there, open it up with play action, throw it deep over the top, the weather doesn't matter. The plays will be open enough on run or pass that I think that the Ravens can overcome weather, take the advantage in terms of the play calls would be what I would say.
So I'll ask this question a little bit differently. Do you think you can get Buffalo to state their intentions in writing 90 minutes before game time so the Ravens can set their inactives around that and have some advice on them? See, this is what I'm getting at. We still got to make a projection about what will work.
I would say yes and no, though, because of Isaiah Likely. And if you Isaiah Likely is the X factor in the regard of what Zay Flowers' health looks like. I mean, it's all wrapped around Zay Flowers being healthy or not. If Zay Flowers is healthy, literally everything is on the table. But if you assume that Bateman moves into the one spot, right, and someone like Likely can do what they were asking Bateman to do in his role, or even if you're getting pieces and parts of that elsewhere, it's not as significant, right? Those guys are mostly on the roster. I don't think Sims and, you know, quite frankly, I would rather see Tez Walker get those snaps over, you know, even if they are gadget plays over Sims and Miller. I think that he's more dynamic and there's more value in actually giving him game snaps anyway. But all things considered, I don't think it changes much of anything. The Ravens have run a ton of 12, 21, and 22 personnel over the last 4 weeks and dominated doing so. I don't think that that's going to change whether Zay Flowers is playing or not.
All right. Well,
or the weather.
You know, the point has been made by a lot of people that Zay Flowers' production has not been that high. And in particular, in games they've been winning recently, they've done it a lot without Zay Flowers. So how serious a problem is it? I think it's just a sour grapes thing because, frankly, Zay Flowers still has a tremendous impact on the defense in terms of drawing assets away from the play. It's one of the really big values. And it's why we want to see him down the field and not used as a gadget player. He doesn't have his gravity doesn't help the run game or really, frankly, the pass game as much as if he's sitting in the backfield somewhere. So,
but the Ravens don't run a lot of two vertical. So, and this is something that they do differently than Buffalo. So Buffalo will run multiple verticals, 2, 3, often 4 at a time to create space. This is part of why Josh Allen chews up so many yards on the ground sometimes, because they create so much space between the back end of where the offensive gets when he scrambles and the front end. The Ravens don't do that. The Ravens set up their offense in much more progression reads for Lamar. Things are flowing in the direction of where his first read is when you watch it. And you can see Lamar's ability to work his way through those progressions in that time and in terms of where the plays are. Even the Bateman touchdown that's the
obvious case. I was just going to bring that up you could definitely see how they're setting up that play with the crossers.
Where Wallace runs the route first and then Bateman comes basically 2 seconds later into the same area that Wallace was in. That intention is that Lamar is looking down the middle of the field, right, in its entirety, and you have to stack the over-under. The Chiefs run their offense much more like this as well. It's just a high-low style offense where you've got somebody that's either currently closer to the line of scrimmage and someone that's deeper, but that means that you've got guys that are closer to the line of scrimmage. And at the end of the day, the Ravens are not running two verticals very often at all. And so Bateman can take those deep routes is what I was trying to say in the very long-winded answer.
Okay. Well, he can, and he'll probably draw some attention doing it. The beneficiary is often, it doesn't have to be a vertical. It can be anybody who's going for a play between level 2 and 3. And as we saw, The Ravens on one of the touchdowns they allowed, with Hamilton being absolutely pissed off with Stevens on the play. By the way, that was much more apparent at the stadium than it was on TV. You really couldn't see much of it on TV. Can't see it on the All 22. Where you could see it is at the ballpark. And he was 6 seconds at least of being livid, walking back up the field with Stevens yelling at him. Stevens was passively aggressive, saying, "I don't want to talk about this here." And he didn't say as much, but it was more like a yeah, yeah, yeah. And the way I interpret from the body language and what was going on is basically Hamilton is telling me, listen up, punk, you can't have that kind of mistake here. This is, and basically the position that Hamilton was put in on that place was not knowing whether he should come in and the underneath route, I forget who it was on the play, but that's the one he was triggering towards, and basically left Stevens alone on the island. But Stevens wanted no part of that island. He had other boating activities he wanted to do. And he let Van Jefferson get behind him, of course. Even in that situation, you can see the difficulty that the safety has in terms of taking away a medium over, a 10 to 19 yard route in the middle that might go to a tight end, say, in the Ravens offense. So, or Aguilar or any number of people. But the other thing, the last point I'll make on this is that whenever your team has to do a lot of chip blocking, and the Ravens are still protecting Rosengarten like nobody's business. They're chip blocking, if you look at it, very heavily to the right side. The Ravens made a big deal out of the fact that Watt didn't make the stat sheet. But Rosengarten had a good game, but he certainly didn't have a great game, where he just completely shut down Watt. First of all, he didn't even touch Watt on a lot of the plays because he's blocking somebody. He's down blocking, and they had other guys on the outside. But they just gave him all kinds of help over there, too. And it was a... nothing wrong with Rosengarten's rookie year. Very happy with how it's progressed. I just don't think it's obvious that he's ready to play left tackle next year.
Yeah, and I think I read that he had two true pass sets one-on-one against TJ Watt. And
that's it? It doesn't surprise me.
Two true non-chip, non-help pass sets against TJ Watt and out of like 22 rushes from Watt. That's what Brandon Thorne said on Twitter.
Okay, virtually... I trust him. He's a good one. The Ravens only had three pass plays the entire games where they had 0-0 sets and chips. Okay. Every other play they had chips, and almost always, if I just read them off here real quickly, they had R74 on the first one, R43, R89, R22, R22, R88, R80. If you can't guess what this means, I'll tell you in a second, but R89. That's an M43, R42, 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 R80, R43. I mean, they just, Ravens only passed the ball 21 times and had one spike. So 21 times, 21 pass plays. All of those are individual plays where they had at least one extra set or chip blocker, eligible receiver assigned to that right side. And it's basically to help Rosengarten. So I'm sure Thorne is correct on his thing where he only had two because they were leaning into him and doing that. But however he's defined that, he probably means no chipper on Watt, even though.
Watt, that's right. Yeah. And so, which is fine. At the end of the day, that's fine. And we're going to see it again this week against Von Miller. And it is what it is. Yeah. like at the end of the day, we don't need to see. Like there is, the Eagles are probably the biggest fear left, maybe the Rams, the biggest fear left on kind of, my landscape of where the pass rushes live for the remainder of the playoff teams. Yeah. Ultimately, and so Rosengarten's going to get help no matter what. But the Steelers' pass rush is legitimate. Like for whatever, the reason the Ravens ran the ball for a reason, and it wasn't just because they were successful doing it. It's because we need to take our strength at their strength, and we need to win there. They're going to do the exact same thing to Buffalo. Buffalo was soft in the middle of their offensive line against Denver's front. And Denver's got some good guards. They've got a decent offensive line. It's not a great one. I mean, Bradley Bozeman's over there. Like let's not go crazy in terms of their quality. But at the end of the day, I think the Ravens are they're going to be squishy, and they're going to have some opportunities in the middle of that defense against Buffalo. I just want to make a quick comment about Brandon Stevens. If the Ravens decide to play him 100% of the snaps in every game remaining for the rest of the year, they will lose one of the games because of it. I don't understand. The Ravens have gone out of their way at this point to bench everybody else that has not improved over the course of the season.
Right.
And Brandon Stevens has gotten worse, and he's still getting, he got 100% of the snaps in this game against Pittsburgh. And I don't get it. There's nothing else to say. I don't get it.
So we're not talking defense today, but we'll dive into that for 30 more seconds here. Is that Brandon Stevens did play 100% of the snaps. White replaced Humphrey for one snap, but otherwise he only played in dime packages. So that means Stevens was out there every single snap. I don't get it either. I think there's a lot of reason to believe that he can really help you at safety because I think he looks good when he's in there playing weak side linebacker in the dime. And I think a lot of the difficulties he has all of a sudden become less. He's played the back end in safety. His skills are very portable coming up front. He's a physical guy in terms of doing that. They like him rushing the passer. They like him in run defense a lot of times. They certainly like him coming up to make a tackle. Like they like all their corners pretty much in that way. But just leaving him alone to not turn his head and try and be a sticky guy, that was all worn very thin. And even in the first matchup when the Bills couldn't do anything offensively against the Ravens, that's one thing Josh Allen was found was Keon Coleman on that left sideline on the back shoulder. Yeah. Very frustrating. And so I'm right there with you. And by the way, you're really talking about three players, actually really four, if you want to talk about it, because originally they had Harrison as part of the inside linebacker group and were doing much more with him and Simpson this season. They sat him right down. And then Simpson got his chance and then they sat him down. So that's two players. Then they gave the job back to Harrison and Board in combination after going through this song and dance of having, you know, rotating. And that's where they still sit right now is really Harrison and Board splitting weak side linebacker snaps. But then also they've sat down, of course, both free safeties, even when they didn't have a real option to do it. They had to hurt the team to put Kyle Hamilton on the back end, but you know, it was basically turning an ace of spades into a queen of hearts or whatever and putting him on the back end, making him a little less useful as a player, but still way better than the two of clubs we got back there.
I just, at this point, I just don't get it. And hopefully it doesn't come back to bite them. I didn't want to, I know this is about offense, but
yeah. Keeps me up. Are you satisfied enough with how Tre'Davious White is played that you'd rather have him at right corner every snap and be using Stevens in some sort of dime/back end safety role that would allow Hamilton to come up and play some slot snaps,
or even a rotation into significant passing downs would be fine with me. If it's second and long and third and long, Tre'Davious White is in. If it's like first and, you know, first and 10, I can go either way, right? Like, and you have to decide what the Bills are trying to do on defense or on offense in that regard, in that instance. But like in obvious passing downs, you got to either move him inside or you got to get him off the field. Okay. And I don't care who it is replacing him.
What you're describing there is just a unnecessary compromise to make Stevens happy to keep him in on first down, because his value as a run defender isn't significantly enough more than White to offset what he also gives up on the early down. So you really talking about
the only concern would be the durability of White. I think that, there were already questions about the durability of White. I think that in this game in particular, for a guy that played his whole career in Buffalo and for 5 years was in the practice squad against Josh Allen, seems like the perfect game to let him play a lot more snaps than Brandon Stevens. Just saying.
That's a good point. That's a good point. He probably knows some of Josh Allen's tendencies just from practicing against him. So, all right, let's talk Lamar really quickly, and then we'll cut it off for the first episode here, and we'll come back for the second. The Steelers only got to Lamar once. It was on an ample time and space play. They did generate 10 pressures in this game, and that wasn't overall great. Let's talk ample time and space, ball out quick pressure first. 8 ample time and space opportunities, 10 pressures, only 3 ball out quick the whole game. So while Lamar might have wanted a quick passing game, and Lamar doesn't really want that. Lamar wants to roam the pocket and throw on his own damn schedule. And he was up there around 323 in time to throw for this game, which was right up in the among the highest of this wild card weekend. It might have been one higher. You know, ball out quick is just, it's not a big part of the Lamar game. So he turns things into ATS pressure or their good friend runs if he runs people out of a pressure. So he gets some scrambles out of that. In this game, he only ran the Ravens out of one pressure. That was one that Linderbaum created. Linderbaum otherwise had a fine game. We'll get to that, but only ran him out of one pressure in this game. So anyway, 10 pressures and 8 ATS. I'm not super excited if the Ravens get that relationship between the two. I'm also not super excited by the Ravens offensive line in terms of that thing. So I think it's a fairly average opportunity set. As it works out, Lamar outperformed his opportunity set by about 44 yards in this game, 165 net to 121 expected. That doesn't seem like that much when you're talking about such low yardage totals, but when you really reduce it to a per pass play total, it's about 2.1 yards per pass better than expectation. So honestly, very, very, very good.
And I think that I mentioned this earlier. I think that the Steelers have the of the 14 teams that were in the initial iteration of the playoffs, two, like the top two or three pass rush, depending on, I mean, obviously Denver had the sack numbers overall, but, and the Ravens, I think, ended up having Ravens more sacks second. Than the Steelers. Yeah. Right. But I would argue that the Steelers pass rush is significantly more potent as a collective unit than the Ravens is. I would gladly kind of take their pass rush over, all things being equal. I don't know that I would take their players, but I would take their pass rush over, over what they generate against everybody. So given all of that, it's really impressive. The other thing is that Lamar, it's funny, I was having a conversation with, and I know this is going to be controversial, a friend of mine who's a Steelers fan, and what he was saying was this: the game that Lamar had against the Steelers in week 16 felt, December, or 17 or whatever that was, felt like the game, the first time Joe Flacco actually like thumped the Steelers. And once he did that, they never looked back. Like before that, they had the mojo, the fumbles, the late bad decisions, all the things that Flacco did early on in his career against Pittsburgh. And then my friend, the Steelers fan, remembers it as there being a turning point, and there wasn't really any looking back. That, I think, is the big question here, right? Obviously, Lamar has had some great games, obviously, earlier in this year, as an example, against Buffalo. But he has had some stinkers against Buffalo in his career. One of them was very weather-dictated and a bunch of drops. You've heard that story before. But is the monkey off his back? Is this whole, I need to slow down a little bit more, I need to be more in sync with my offensive coordinator, we need to do more to be prepared to make sure that I'm going to be amped up early to get that energy out. Maybe it's running the ball more. Maybe it's whatever that is. Like, what do we have to do to get that? That awareness and that recognition of whatever that needs to be in these games that he struggled in. Has he gotten over the hump? The numbers that we see about how he thrived against when there was even the, you know, not a lot of throwing opportunities, but when the pressure was there, still getting the results that he ended up getting in this game, portend very well to the Ravens' kind of ability to make a run here in these playoffs. And right. Even looking back to last year, the Texans game was not, it wasn't the same. There's something to the Steelers and Lamar. For all the pundits that like to harp about that, it's actually true. I think there was certainly some kind of, like, maybe not a mental block, but it was there. He was thinking about it, right?
This is a very good defense that was put together to stop Lamar Jackson, and the Steelers know him better than anyone, and the Steelers are extremely good at scheming to try and stop him. They had been for a long time, even though it wasn't always Jackson they were facing, but when they did face Jackson, they were pretty effective. Unfortunately, the Chiefs are kind of built that way too. And the Bills less so. They haven't faced the Bills a lot of times during the Jackson era, but they still, you know, are a quality opponent. The Ravens are should be significantly concerned going up there this weekend. What else I want to say about Lamar Jackson before we go? Didn't leave much on the field in this game. I didn't feel he was accurate. There were no drops by the Ravens. They caught two out of four contested balls. So maybe there's a couple balls there that could have been dealt with. And it was a couple of big third downs that I think he had, not drops, but contested catches that couldn't be hauled in. Honestly, a game where I don't think you leave this game with a lot of regrets for what Lamar Jackson did. And often there's individual plays. There's one guy that he should have hit over the top, or there's, if he'd just seen this, I don't really even think there was that. And the magical play, of course, to end the half, I think we take with us to our graves. I think we'll remember that one for the rest of our lives.
What's so funny, and Lamar said this after the game, he was like, I could have run that in for a touchdown. He's like, justice was there. He was open. But he was like, I had the lane. And he was like, I was going to score a touchdown either way. But it was easier to throw to justice. But and he did. If you see the play, Lamar had one guy that was maybe 8-9 yards away from him. And we all know that closing yards and with an 8 yards to gain from Lamar is very unlikely to happen.
Yeah, well, it was a great game for him. Nice to see him get the first team All-Pro. I'm not 100% convinced that it means he's won the MVP at this point. I know a lot of people are sure of it. Polymarket is not. If you look at Polymarket, they've got him at like 74% to win the MVP right now, not 100. And that means there's people having limit orders on both sides of that are still looking to wager. It's not a sure thing. It is not a sure thing. And so we'll see. It would take a lot of votes to flip, but I think it's conceivable that it will happen still.
It would take a lot of votes to flip, and it would also take Allen to pick up all the second place votes, which he did not get in the All-Pro vote. No, this year. It was 30-18 in the first place votes, right? And so Josh Allen did not get all the second – like there, Joe Burrow took some of the second place votes from Josh Allen in the All-Pro votes.
Did you see a complete description of voting that went through the second?
I haven't seen votes? A complete description of it, but yeah. I have read that Josh Allen did not get all the second place votes, and that the thing to hang your hat on here is that even if a couple people flipped, he has a ways to go because of that difference from between those second and third place votes.
Okay,
if,
so
unless those voters decided to move him up, which seems really unlikely. I can't imagine somebody that voted – Burrow in as all pro would then flip that for Josh Allen. I can see how they might do it for Lamar, but not
the
Josh
risk Allen. Would be that. The voting is in, so it's the same panel. So these guys are not going to want to look like idiots from that perspective. But the risk would be that somebody with Buffalo connections or that really believes that Allen deserves it voted Allen as the first place guy and is one of the 12 votes, but is willing to bury Jackson. In terms of the 1-5 ranking, or leave them completely off their list. But they'll have some ballot that looks like Allen, Burrow, Barkley, Goff, Hurts, you know, kind of thing, and has no Jackson on it at all. If you want to play that game, and by the way, Ted Williams, if you want to look at the baseball, won the Triple Crown twice. He lost the MVP award both times. And he lost the MVP award both times in part because there was a Boston writer who left him. This is the story the way I remember it. A Boston writer who left him entirely off his ballot at least one of those two times. One other time he might have had him lower, but he was out of the top 10 because it's top 10 in voting for the MVP, and it was even back then. And if he'd gotten even a single one, then he would have gotten the thing. He lost it in 41 when he hit 406 to DiMaggio and had a 56-game winning streak. In 42, he won the Triple Crown, and Joe Gordon of the Yankees, a second baseman, so more important defensive position, yada, 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 won the MVP award away from him. And it was really, that was a complete bullshit vote. And then he lost it again in 47 to, might have been DiMaggio again, but it was a Yankee, I believe, in 47 who won it from him. And I'd have to look it up again. But anyway, twice won the Triple Crown and managed to lose it both times.
Yeah, I don't know how... We could do the math here. The way the points ended up breaking down was that is it 1-2-3 or 3-2-1 in terms of the All-Pro votes, in terms of how the points were allocated? Do you know?
I don't know how many levels of voting there are in All-Pro, whether it's 3-2-1.
I don't either. So Lamar Jackson had 109 points with 30 first-place votes. Okay. We could definitely figure this out. Josh Allen had 78 points.
That's got to be three. It's got to be three. It's the only thing that makes any sense. Okay,
Josh Allen had 78 points with 18 votes.
Okay, so we could assume that he got 54 among his first place votes, and Lamar got 90. So Lamar only got 19 more points, while Allen got 24 additional points from lower things. So what that tells me is there is more Allen support on the back end.
And Joe Burrow had 2 points as well.
Okay, so Lamar's actually hurt. By the fact,
I misspoke. 13 total points and 2 first place votes.
Okay, we don't need that. Okay, what I'm telling you is here is this. I think I can tell from this that it's got to be a 3-2-1 voting mechanic. That the 30 votes times 3 points.
It's got to be It has to be a 2-1 voting mechanic, or a 3-2, maybe a 3-2. Assuming Burrow would have been the third person voted to be all pro, he would have way more than 13 points then.
Okay, let's go with Burrow had 2 first place votes. And so he would have gotten 2 times 3 is for 6 points for that. And so he could have gotten, if it was 2 that won the voting, then he could have gotten 7 other votes as a second guy, and Lamar could have gotten left off 7 ballots, which would be terrible. I don't think that's what happened. And it doesn't make sense because Lamar can't get 19 votes the other way on the 2. So I think mathematically this has to be a 3-2-1. So if it's a 3-2-1, then one of the things that's holding back Lamar is he can't get a lot of second place votes that belong to Allen.
I don't think it'd be a 3-2-1. That math doesn't. We'll have to try and do some research on this.
All right,
but that math doesn't add for me because Burrow. It's hard to believe that Burrow wouldn't. Well, nobody else had any points other than Burrow. So then in the scenario of which Burrow was always third, except for the 2 times he was first, he would have 50 votes minus 2, 48 plus 6. He would have 54 points.
Good point. Good point.
That's where I was trying to go with that. I think it's like a 3-2 or a 3. I don't know. I legitimately don't know. Or maybe they split points for a tie. Maybe it's like 3-2. And then for like, if you can put two guys in a slot.
Yeah, maybe.
They split the points. I don't know. I'll try and find out. We can go on break.
Yeah, that's good. All right. Jordan, it's always a pleasure talking football with you. Even just getting into this, you see how much I really dig this or any of the math we get into on this. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at RavenSitRoom. Would love to chat about it.
All right. One of the great follows on Twitter/X at RavenSitRoom. Make sure you give him a follow and tag him in on questions. He always likes that he'll give you a very significant response to whatever you're asking. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening to the show. As always, like and subscribe if you're listening on YouTube. And if you have a friend who you think might like this content, always pass it along. Word of mouth is always a great way when the algorithm is not just doing it all by itself. So please do that for us. Otherwise, Jordan, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.